Ball Spark. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Yesterday, we were not able to get Jaron's opinion on a hot-button issue from the Big 12 media days last week. None other than horns down being a permanent penalty. Can't wait. I told my buddy driving home last night, I said there's a couple of things that might happen tomorrow. One, I might get fired when talking about the Olympics and this COVID stuff. And two, Jared might get fired when he's talking about the horns down being a penalty.
I'll give you a little insight of what I think, a little clue, a little teaser.
I bet it's not positive.
I love it.
Oh, wow.
And I'll tell you why.
Oh, my gosh. That's a completely different take than I thought he would have. Tie up some loose ends from yesterday on a few things, one of which was the club championship at Elk City Golf and Country Club. Got to give some people their due for their performance. There was an interesting, if you looked at the leaderboard, interesting anomaly, I think, with the top and the bottom of it. Same last name, as it turned out. And then also Taylor Varnell. He was called up to Birmingham, Double A Birmingham, over the weekend, efforting on when his first appearance might be, as I got that information from his mother and also his mother-in-law.
Cool.
That he was headed to Birmingham. And it was so funny, too, because about 2 weeks ago in Sunday school when his mother-in-law walked in, and, you know, they're constantly kind of going back and forth to Winston-Salem, and I was like, all right, enough of this. When is he going to get called up? And she goes, I don't know. I don't get it. And then I'll be dang, 2 weeks later, she walked in and said, guess what? Taylor's going to Birmingham. So, and I ask you this question, and it kind of stumped you just a little bit, so I'll ask the listening audience. Birmingham, Alabama, the Barons, AA for Chicago's White Sox. Outside of Taylor Varnell, who is the other most famous person to play for the Barons? Hit us up, 225-9698. 225-9698. You knew that anyway.
If you listened to the Skinny on Sports report yesterday, you know the answer.
That is correct.
If you paid attention, you know the answer.
That is correct. So that was a pretty easy question that I asked about the Birmingham Barons.
Apparently.
From my phone, the text line. It is one Michael Jordan. Back in 1994, MJ played, what, 18 months worth of baseball, basically? Or not, maybe not even that much. A full season, a winter. And kind of back around to spring training before he went back to the basketball floor there at Birmingham. I remember, I mean, for one, there's a 30 for 30 on this called Jordan Rides the Bus. It's
right.
Fantastic.
Right.
It goes into, you forget, do you remember who the manager was at the time in Birmingham?
Not a clue.
It's somebody you know, somebody that's won World Series championships.
Bobby Valentine.
Terry Francona.
Oh, okay.
And so the insight there from him. And he kind of goes into some conversations they would have actually watching the NBA playoffs with MJ and watching his Bulls and Scottie Pippen melt down. You remember that that famous game against the Knicks where Phil Jackson ran the play for Tony Kukoc to take the last shot, which he made, but Scottie refused to go in the game.
Right.
You know, and Jordan and Terry Francona is like, it was so interesting to watch those games with him. And then he wouldn't say it, but then you realize watching him, you know, like, man, they're missing something. And then he'd look across and go, oh, yeah, that guy. That's what they're missing. But that's really, really cool for Taylor Varnell. Headed to Birmingham, trying to figure out when his first appearance is going to be. He was 4-3 at Winston-Salem, Class A Winston-Salem so far this year. 2.89 ERA, struck out 115 and only walked 34. So a really good, you know, first half of the season there in Winston-Salem for Taylor. And so now, the interesting thing about getting to Double A to me is, you know, I think a lot of people just assume, you know, you go A, then you go to Double A, then you have to go to Triple A, then the bigs. Once you get to Double A, that's when you can start skipping a step to go straight to the big leagues. And in a lot of ways, it's almost better not to have to and not get stuck in Triple A. If you can just go straight to the bigs, it'll be interesting to see exactly how it goes. You know, with the White Sox being in a pennant chase, being one of the best teams in baseball.
That'd be interesting.
You know, does that kind of slow his timeline down? Or do they, you know, I mean, because it's not like, you know, it's on a team where you can kind of afford to see what you got for some of these young guys, like, you know, the September call-ups and all that kind of thing. That they're not looking for future, you know what I mean? They're trying to win the World Series.
Right.
So it'll be cool to see that. I mean, the possibilities are endless there as far as the rest of the season. But Taylor in Double A, and so that's super cool.
Let me ask you, can he paint the corners when he pitches?
What is the joke you're making? It's going over my head.
I mean, can he, you know, paint me a Birmingham?
Oh, dear.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, dear.
I had to throw it in there.
I think that's one of those that I think that probably sounded better in your head.
It did. It did. It's kind of like when you sing a song, you hear it in your head, then you sing it, and it's bad. It's a great song, though. This is a great opportunity for Taylor Varnell.
Yeah, it is. It's a
real. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do. I'd love to get him on the show.
Yeah, we need to get him back. Yeah. We had him the one time. We need to get him back.
It probably would have to be after the season.
You just call him up. I mean, he's an hour ahead of us.
We'll see. If he's willing.
See what he thinks
great.
About
it. Mean, I don't want to mess with his mojo here. You know, I don't want to mess with it.
That's true.
He might say, I'm not doing interviews right now.
See what he thinks about.
He might big league us. He's in Double A now.
See what he thinks about OU's football chances. I know he's a big fan.
Yeah.
So, anyhow, that's a really cool
story.
That
is a great story.
That we can be following.
We talked yesterday about the youth in Western Oklahoma. Uh-huh. This is a fine example of that.
And he's taught a few of them. That's even the cool thing. Yeah. When he's back nearing the offseason, spends his time helping some of the youngsters get on their way to figuring out how to pitch. That's a really cool deal. Gotta love some Keith Whitley. Paint me a Birmingham, Tracy Lawrence.
Tracy Lawrence, Keith Whitley.
He must have did an older version.
I don't think so. I don't want to go down the history of country music right now.
But let's do it on me.
On our sports show.
It's a new
Keith
one.
Keith Whitley is A Lover Rainy Night. Isn't that Keith Whitley?
I think that's Ronnie Millsap.
See, here we go. This is what the road I didn't want to go down. Now we're going to be Googling it up, looking. Maybe he wrote the song. I don't know.
No, wait. I Love a Rainy Night. That's Addie Rabbit.
Who is Keith? What? Why?
Keith Whitley is the first one that's saying, yeah, Addie Rabbit. See, I had it backwards in my mind. Keith Whitley's the one that sang the song that Alison Krauss sang.
Right.
When you say
you
nothing
say
at all.
You say it best. Yeah, that one.
Yeah, Love
he
a Rainy
originally
Night's
did
Eddie
that
Rabbit.
One.
Yeah, Keith Whitley did, yes.
Keith and then Whitley
he,
did that one.
He died a very, very young man.
Yes. Yes, tragic death. But Tracy Lawrence did Paint Me a Birmingham.
I'm positive he did.
I am too.
Now, I don't know if somebody did it before him, but I am positive he did. They all sing each other's songs, darn it.
Well, I mean.
Maybe they did.
I'm Googling it. Paint Me a Birmingham. Let's get a little history on Paint Me a Birmingham.
Now I'm intrigued.
We've done it. We've gone down this road of the history of country music.
I goofed on Paint Me a Birmingham. Yeah, Lori Morgan broke his heart. Y'all are right.
let's see here. Song was written by Buck Moore and Gary Duffy, if you know who that is, but it was sung by Tracy Lawrence, and I don't see that it was covered by anybody else other than him.
Bammo.
There it is.
I remember that song being sang right out here at the rodeo one year.
By?
Tracy Lawrence.
He was here?
A few years ago.
Great tune. Probably his most popular tune.
Oh, disagree.
Oh, no. Okay. What would it be?
Surely Alibis. Or Texas Tornado.
Maybe. Oh, Texas Tornado is a good one. Maybe. Maybe his most successful? You think? Like chart-wise?
Oh, I bet he had surely Tracy Lawrence had multiple number ones.
I did not expect us talking about Tracy Lawrence on this Skinny on Sports Day. I am so I am ashamed that I brought up that weak joke.
He also had one of the most iconic 90s haircuts of all time.
Yes.
The curly kind of mullet.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank goodness Blake Shelton decided to cut his.
Blake Shelton, Diamond Dallas Page.
DDP.
Had that haircut.
Yes.
A lot of people had. Brett the Hitman Hart had that haircut kind of.
That haircut, yeah. Especially in country music.
Tracy Lawrence had, oh yeah, Alan Jackson had a version. Maybe not quite as curly. Alan Jackson's was a little bit more flowing, like free-flowing.
Alan Jackson, he pulled it off nicely. I think he still wears it. I'm not seeing a list of his.
I'm going to go ahead and say Alan Jackson has never got a different haircut.
Nah, it's been the same.
Kind of had the same one.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Anyhow.
Good stuff.
So Birmingham.
It's really sparking up the text line of all the stuff we talk about. The sports stuff. We dive deep into sports talk, and sometimes the text line is nothing. But we're talking about country music, and all of a sudden everyone's giving their 2 cents.
The two most popular topics so far in the text line in these, what, we've been doing this show for, what, 3.5 years, a little bit more?
Yeah.
The two most, like, thought-provoking topics we've had was this today and Little Debbie Snacks.
Little Debbie Snacks, yes.
Everybody had the opinion and knew the answers on the country music and the Little Debbie Snacks.
Oh, man.
I can't avoid this next topic of the club championship at the golf course this weekend.
I heard you give the numbers yesterday.
Yeah, Mike Wilson, the Red Oak. Actually, it's Big Daddy Mike Wilson, the Red Oak Flash.
I'm trying to listen. Forgive me.
He beat everybody.
He
works for Moran. Moran Equipment, by the way, one of the sponsors of the KECO Golf Tournament coming up in a week from Saturday.
I'll ask off air. That's my question. Because I'm trying to place who
he's an older guy.
I'm apologizing.
A little bit of an older guy. He's got
I'm sure I've seen him and I've met him. Maybe even met
he has got a sweet OU tattoo on his calf.
Yes, he was in the horse race.
Yeah, I think
yeah,
so.
Yeah. I remember that. Okay, yeah. Okay.
So he won with 69-66, beating one of my former high school teammates, Justin Twyman, by 2. Twyman shot 68-69. The other flight winners, Double D, David Dyson of Barber Dyson Ford, won a flight. And also, he didn't really think he should have been in the senior flight. Turns out, I guess he was. He got a cool trophy for winning that thing, though. It was like kind of a glass that changed colors, like a 3 or 4 different colors. But he shot 71-72 to win a flight and the senior flight. Callan Nichols, 79-73, was the B-flight winner. Dennis Cates, 90-88, was the C-flight winner. And Robert Lakey, the Golden Seniors, which I think was 70 and over. How about this? 73-75. Wonder how close he was to shooting his age.
I was about to say that.
I know he's done that a bunch of times. But, yeah, Robert, 73-75, 148. He was pretty dominant. But maybe the headline of the entire tournament was the guy at the very top of the leaderboard had the same last name as the guy at the very bottom of the leaderboard. Both of those last names being Wilson.
Ah. Okay.
Mike with 2 rounds in the 60s.
Yeah.
Sean, 103.
Oh.
High for the weekend.
I felt like I might have been able to beat him. That's around my range.
103, not solid.
I'm happy to break 90, man.
He played bad. You know he played bad. When even Gabe felt sorry for him after the round was over. That's when you know it was pretty bad.
Oh.
He was on track to better himself by a few shots for sure. And but he had to leave. His uncle got sick, so he had to withdraw.
I see.
After 9 holes on Sunday, which he would have been able to redeem himself a little bit from what he told me, but 103. I wonder if somebody asked him, how did you shoot 103? And he said, well, I missed a putt for 102 and tapped it in for 103. Everybody wants to know my scores. I had 73-74. I hit 26 out of 36 greens, so that tells you how good my putting and chipping was.
You keep track of that?
I went back and kept track of it because I was like, man, I hit it way too good to shoot the scores I shot. Turns out. I 3-putted 3 holes in a row on Sunday. I am positive I've never done that in my golfing career. I'm positive about that. But it's the way it goes sometimes.
Yeah.
But congrats. Congrats to all the winners there at the Elk City Golf and Country Club. And maybe a little shame to the guy that was at the literally at the caboose.
We know he could do better. In all fairness, he probably had a lot on his mind.
Yeah.
You know.
Or he was trying too hard.
Or he was trying too hard.
And just nothing was working. KJ almost shot 100 the last day, too. You know, it's funny when we veer off topics of sports in particular, like we did in that first segment. There's a definite couple of classes of listener. There's the one that's like, oh, yeah, this is fun.
Yeah.
Eddie Rabbit, Tracy Lawrence, Keith Whitley, da-da-da-da-da.
Little Debbies.
That's right. And then there's the other one, like, for instance, my niece Parker, when she's listening.
Yeah.
And we don't talk specifically every second about sports. I can hear her going, talk sports, Bubba. Talk sports, Bubba.
Believe me, I got a text that said, aren't y'all a sports show?
Yeah, I mean, that's just, it's funny.
It's from someone I wouldn't even expect us to want. She would want us to talk sports. That's my wife. She just likes to listen and she supports us, but she's not sitting there watching the games with me to help me analyze what's going on.
Maybe if we'd have been, I better not.
Maybe
mind.
She nope. does actually get
nope,
her
you're not,
sports.
You're not
going
to talk me into saying something to get me in trouble
no,
before the
to.
Luau.
I'm not going to do that. No, I'm just saying maybe she act that we are her only source of sports information.
Oh.
You see what I'm saying? She's not going home watching SportsCenter.
I wouldn't either.
Yeah, neither am I. But you know what I mean? She's not waiting for the 10 o'clock news and waiting for after weather, the latest sports news. She's not. She usually gets her sports info from me.
Yeah.
And you, in this case.
And now
so
she
she's like, wait a minute. I know about Tracy Lawrence. I want to know what's going on at the Olympics.
Well, that's next. Good thing. So I was listening. I was driving home last night, 8 o'clock or something, after a meeting that I had to attend. And I was listening to the two guys on ESPN Radio that are on at that time, which are normally pretty entertaining.
Yeah, it's really not bad.
Yeah, it's Ian Fitzsimmons, Freddie Coleman. They're very entertaining. And they, I guess yesterday afternoon or early evening, one of the U.S. gymnasts that's an alternate tested positive for COVID. Or did she test positive? Or is it contact tracing? I'm not 100% sure. I think it was a positive test. So then all of a sudden, now the whole conversation starts with, should they, I mean, as a matter of fact, one of them was going on and on and on about the fact that the Olympics shouldn't be played.
Based on what reasoning?
COVID.
Just because of the
COVID
fear
is,
of spreading COVID?
COVID is rampant, running rampant in Japan.
How did Japan turn into this third world country that can't control it?
I
thought they were the ones that were always straight and narrow. They were ahead of us technologically and everything.
They're having a super duper hard time getting the vaccines.
To actually get their hands on it. Did they not ask? I mean, I guess we didn't. I mean, our president's handed out like candy to the rest of the world. Did they not get any?
Well, maybe the old president would have handed it to Japan and the new one's given it to Iran.
Thought provoking?
Yeah. Never know.
Yeah.
Seems like the way it's going.
Yeah. Those prisoners at Guantanamo Bay are getting released or getting vaccines as well.
Yeah. Maybe some of the people coming across the border in the South that aren't supposed to. They just jab them.
Anywho.
And so that's part. I mean, that was the whole argument. Okay. And I just thought to myself, what?
Well, I mean,
what about everything else that's been happening for the last 18 months? So we didn't just not play those? And then it's almost like he caught himself. As the other one started talking, then it was almost like he caught himself like, wait a minute. What argument am I making? Because we've been playing sports in America for a year now. Crowds are coming back full capacity as we speak. Football is full bore go.
Right.
So then the conversation kind of shifted a little bit to, so if the Olympics were in America, would this even be a conversation?
No, it would not. No, we'd be full on. Well, let's take that back. If it's in LA, probably not. You see what I'm saying? It'd probably be the same situation. No fans in what they're dealing with in Japan. But let's say it's in, I don't know, say the state of Texas is hosting the Olympics. in Dallas and Houston and San Antonio, then I'd say, yeah, it's 100% going to happen. With fans, by the way.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting topic because, for one, there's no way what the...
You know Newsom wouldn't want it.
Yeah, but he might because of
Abbott
money.
But Abbott would.
Because of money.
I mean, that's true.
And that's a big part of why it's happening. You know, NBC pays who knows how much money for the rights to it and then generates untold billions of ad revenue. And they've, you know, had to put it off 1 year. And here we are, what, Friday is the opening ceremony.
For no fans, yeah.
So, that's obviously the games are going to take place. There's not going to be any way that we get right here 3 days before or what have you, and then
they
it's canceled.
Down, yeah.
That's not happening.
They build stadiums for this thing.
I think I read that Japan as a country has spent $17 billion to get ready for this. It's happening. And you know, maybe... I just don't know how all the revenue and the financial part of this goes. You know they're losing.
Oh, yeah.
Because of not having fans. Yeah. But they also probably don't have much of an appetite to slow it down another year.
Right.
But I just when he first said it, I was just thinking, what have you been talking about the last year? All these games that are being played. What, I mean, that is so... Such a crazy thought. I mean, like, yeah, adamant, these games shouldn't be played. Well, why? What's so much different about the Olympics than what we've been doing here? And not just here, all over the world. Everybody's been playing for the last year.
Soccer over in Europe.
Absolutely. And now there's even crowds. You know, look at the, you know, two things that didn't happen a year ago just got completed. Wimbledon, the British Open.
There you go.
You know, and both had people in the stands. And it's just when – maybe the question isn't when. Maybe it's if. If there's ever going to be – is there ever going to be a point where an athlete can make the decision whether or not he wants to play with COVID versus just being told he can't? Because the people that are – this follow the science crowd is literally ignoring it when it comes to sports. The right. Most least susceptible people on earth to this are these athletes that are all somewhere between 20 and 40 in peak, tip-top physical condition.
Look at John Rahm.
Yeah, and John Rahm's kind of a pudgy one.
Yeah.
Compared to a lot of these other guys and gals.
Right.
I mean, I still go back to, and we've said this for, God, since probably... You know, March through April was one of those pretty scary times. Like, you didn't really know what was going on.
Of course.
By the end of April into May of last year, you kind of had it figured. Like, okay, this group of people is in trouble.
Right.
This group of people, it's not even a cough.
Right.
A vast, vast, vast majority of those two groups. Now, there are always outliers in everything. I mean, I had an uncle that was 80 years old, had one kidney and no spleen, which would be the target demographic of not being able to make it with COVID, got it, and kicked its butt and moved on down life's path for a while.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, there's always those outliers on both sides of that equation. But, have there been three, I can think of two or three athletes that even got sick? Has there been one that's been hospitalized? I believe there was like a small college football player in like Ohio or something.
That's like an NC State player.
Maybe something like, you know, maybe a couple. Okay, how many athletes are there around the world?
Oh, man, millions.
And so we've got two?
Yeah. It falls into the science that we're told to listen to, right?
And the science shows it's you're fine. So I guess
and I love numbers. We're sports guys. We love numbers and statistics. And the statistics tell me that exactly what we've been saying for damn near 18 months is the science, and it's showing us that there's a high probability of this not affecting those in top shape and the top shape of their lives. Right? Yeah, it's a dumb argument to make about if the Olympics should even be played. The only argument I could see of if it should be played or not is, will they have enough athletes? Are there going to be a lot of athletes that are going to just opt out?
Yeah.
You know? And we talked about when this first happened and in the NBA bubble and of course, the Major League Baseball with its shortened season, et cetera, about asterisks to sports. Sometimes I think the Olympics, this Olympics is always going to have that asterisk, I think. Because it's delayed a year. You got athletes who aren't in it. And I haven't heard, you just mentioned a gymnast that was an alternate. I haven't heard of someone like, Kevin Durant. Being told, hey, you can't go to the games. You've contact tracing. Or
Bradley Beal can't.
There's one. Okay.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's.
You see where I'm going with that, though? I mean, that's where I can see the question of if they should be played based on, well, will there even be athletes there to play or will they want to play? And then B, I think when they are played, the whole asterisk conversation comes into play. And that's sad. It is. You got someone who wins a gold medal and they don't want an asterisk put next to it. But what if that person wins a gold medal and they were ranked third in the world going in because the top two decided they didn't want to compete?
Yeah, it's just the breaks, though. And the problem I have with it all is if the number one and number two didn't want to, that's fine. But if they did and didn't get to, that's not fine.
I agree.
So do you think there's ever going
to
be a point where
they get to choose
it
for
becomes
themselves?
The choice of the athlete?
I think it will. I think over time when they're being told over and over again you can't play because of this, you know, there will be an uprising, sure.
I mean, at what point did they just say, screw you, I'm playing?
Yeah, yeah. And it's going to – that will come. And it's going to take – who's going to do it first? And that's what I loved about this whole process is when something happens and there's an uproar. John Rahm, fine example. It was an uproar pulling him off when he was on his way to win that thing. And there's an uproar. What happened like a week or two later? The PGA came out and said, you know what, we're going to change our policy a little bit.
That's the next question I've got.
See what I'm saying? So that's kind of the positive of seeing stuff like this happen. Like, okay, that we can't let that happen. So let's change our policy. We need to adjust with what we're seeing with, you know, vaccination rates and all this stuff and all that. You know, and what we know now, we know so much more now about COVID-19 than we did 18 months ago.
So I got a couple questions just popped up in my head as you were talking. The first one I had written down. At what point, or will it? And I think some of the sports are kind of headed this way, some aren't. But what is the point of testing somebody that's vaccinated? And if that's the case, then what's the point of getting vaccinated?
Yeah,
I mean, we've been listening to the first 2 weeks of media days, Big 12 last week, SEC yesterday, Bob Bowlesby of the Big 12, Greg Sankey of the SEC. Without saying it, basically said, there aren't going to be postponements because of COVID this year. There are going to be forfeits. And Sankey talked about yesterday that only 6 of the 14 SEC teams had reached the 80% vaccination rate on their football squads. Bowlesby was talking about that, you know, not being quite where they wanted it. But here's my question. If you're still going to test vaccinated players, then what's the point of getting it?
True.
Other than the political theater that we've all had to watch for the last year, for sure.
Yeah.
Same reason why you've got Monty Williams with the dadgum mask on in an interview miles away from each other.
Yeah.
It's just theater.
Right.
So what is the point then, if you're going to test vaccinated players for COVID, what's the point of getting the vaccination?
I agree.
What's the point of having those certain rates of vaccination for teams expected? No, the NFL's doing the same thing. I think only the Colts are below the threshold right now. But if you're still going to get tested when you're vaccinated, and we've seen all across the world that just getting the vaccine does not mean you don't get COVID. I mean, it's happening right now all over the place where both things are happening. Double shots, but got it. So if I'm a player and I already don't want to do it, if I'm going to still get tested with the vaccine, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
Now, if there's a benefit to doing it to make sure, like, okay, if I get the vaccine, it doesn't matter if I get COVID because nobody's going to know unless I get sick.
Right.
And when basically 90% of the athletes or even maybe a higher rate that we know of will tell you, oh, asymptomatic, never even felt anything, just had a positive test.
Right.
So then there's a reason too to avoid that. But if they're going to still test vaccinated players, there's no point in doing it, I don't think, because it doesn't do you any good.
I agree. If they are going to tell players to get vaccinated, and then they need to follow it up with, if you get vaccinated, we won't swab your nose before every game, and you can drop the mask. Like the CDC has said, if you're vaccinated, you can drop the mask. They've said that. And, you know, I've been very transparent about me getting the vaccine, and also been very transparent of that was my free will and that was my choice. And if you don't want to get it, that's your free will. That's your choice. I don't judge. But my main motivation to do that is because I hate the mask. And when I saw CDC said, you know, hey, you can drop the mask indoors and outdoors if you're vaccinated. I'm like, great. That's what, you know. So my point is, if you're going to tell players to get vaccinated, give them a reason to get vaccinated.
That's right.
Give them a reason to get vaccinated. I had a reason to get vaccinated for my personal choices, but the main reason was I hate wearing a mask. Mm-hmm. A bearded guy hates wearing a mask. And I just wanted that my freedom back. And that was like my personal reward. Give these players a reason to get vaccinated. You get vaccinated, you're going to play. We won't test you anymore.
Yeah. And that makes perfect sense to me.
That's not hard. It's not a hard concept.
But we'll see if it goes that way in the end. All right, I can't believe what you said in kind of the pre-show about the horns down thing. So last week, for those that didn't see it in the Big 12 media days, the director of officials for the Big 12 mentioned that horns down by Texas opponents to a Texas opponent was probably going to be a penalty. If you did it to your own crowd, probably wouldn't be. I mean, that is so vague and leaves so much room for trouble going down the road. But, and I figured you would.
Maybe, who asked the question?
Maybe not. I don't know.
Okay. I don't know if it was one of our Oklahoma guys.
I would doubt it.
Okay.
Bet it was somebody from down in the Austin area.
Okay.
But anyway, so it's vague, but it does appear that that's what's going to happen. If you do the horns down to a player, it's going to be a penalty. My question was twofold. One, if a Texas player does horns up, is it a penalty?
True.
It's not going to be.
Any hand gesture a penalty?
It's not going to be.
Should be.
And see, what about, okay, why is it just horns down?
Yeah.
What about guns up?
Isn't
guns at either OSU or Tech?
Yeah.
What about the little frog thing?
I said that to a friend about the guns up thing. That's more culturally inappropriate nowadays than a horns down, making a gun gesture, right?
Oh, it's
you see what I'm saying?
Hey, look out, OSU fan, Texas Tech fan. You probably won't get to do that much longer, hurting somebody's feelings.
Yeah, but you know why it won't be an issue for OSU or Tech fans? Because they're not soft like Texas is.
That's true.
They're soft. This is why I love it, Aaron. Because it's revealed the incredibly soft underbelly that Texas has. How soft they are. Mentally. Baker Mayfield said it great. He said they're mentally weak. And that's why I loved it. Because the reaction from the public, from what I've seen, wasn't, yeah, that's wrong. They shouldn't do that. They should get flagged. It was, look how far Texas has fallen. How weak they are. Because that is the one thing that triggers them, and they're so soft, a little hand gesture that's been in existence for, I don't know, as long as college football's been played in Dallas. You know what I mean? But suddenly they can't win, so they got to cry about something else. That's why I loved it. Revealed how soft they are.
It's hard not to say that that's not true.
I mean, I want to go to the game in Dallas, and I want to find a Texas fan, put my horns down, and go, are you going to go to a safe place and cry now?
Did you see what Barry Switzer said when they asked him about it?
No.
He said, first off, it was BS that this would be a penalty. And then he mentioned that it's the same as if somebody shoots you the finger, you shoot it right back.
Yeah.
If somebody gives you the horns up, you give them the horns down.
Right.
I thought that was a really pretty funny comparison with the two. But it evokes that emotion in 9 fan bases around this conference.
Yeah.
That getting shot the bird does. And it's also a way, and I think you hit the nail right on the head, it's also a way for the other Big 12 schools to just show the world how soft Texas has become.
They have.
Because if we will do horns down at them, then they'll get their little panties in a wad and start whining about it.
Right.
Now, they'll tell you that every time they see it happen, oh, we're in your head. We live rent-free in your head. No, it's the other way around.
It is absolutely the other way
around. It's the other way around.
Because it's been doing this for years. We've been doing the horns down for years.
And it started because there's nothing they've been able to do about it on the football field.
So now they're going straight to Big Daddy Bowlby.
That's exactly right. It's pretty funny.
I wish somebody would have asked him that question of, well, why isn't other hand gestures? Why isn't the horns up a penalty? A Texas player goes into the end zone. What does he do? Stands there and puts his horns up.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hand gesture.
But it's
I'm with you on that one. It makes it, and this is why Nebraska left, right? Because Texas looks like they're just so protected and favored in this conference, no matter who the commissioner is. And this is another example of that. And this is but again, I saw the comment and I knew immediately. The public reaction is going to be, look how soft they are. Look at those crybabies in Austin. And then it just adds fuel to the flame. You're going to see a million horns down in the Cotton Bowl.
Oh, it makes it worse than it would have been.
Absolutely it does.
I think it's so funny because I got this text just a second ago. I mean, where has this outrage been all these years? It took the hamburger man, Tom Herman, and the chip on his little man's shoulder to bring this to the forefront. And so congratulations, Texas fan. You hired a coach and now fired him whose legacy is going to be whining about horns down, but yet the most famous video of that guy, you know what it is?
Making fun of a Missouri
quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty interesting.
That and kissing his little players when
kissing
they get off
his
the
players,
bus.
Flipping off the camera during National Signing Day.
Right.
I wonder if Sarkisian. It doesn't feel like Sarkisian is going to be as easy to dislike for the teams around the conference.
He just seems tougher.
As Herman,
for one, he seems tougher.
Now, the one way he could do it is if they start winning.
Well, of course.
That's when the hate will come.
Well, of course. But even when Mac Brown was winning, he was still like this likable coach.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like your old uncle who's a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
But a really nice guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That you didn't really want to see win, but if you did, you're like, oh, shucks, Mac won.
Well, darn. At least he didn't beat us.
Yeah.
Nah, I love how soft Texas has become. It's so great.
I think it's going to be interesting to see the Sarkisian stuff because, like I said, Herman was easy to dislike immediately.
Yeah.
From the word go. Sarkisian's way more polished as far as he didn't say anything that would even get the ire up of any fan base. Not even like lifting an eyebrow at, was that a shot? There was none of that.
No.
He could tell he had been to the Nick Saban school of media relation.
But was he handed the same script as the first time Tom Herman attended a Big 12 media days?
Yeah, but even Tom Herman the first time screwed up.
What do you say?
Oh, he talked about how there wasn't elite talent on his own, and then he realized he said that, and then he started taking shots. And, you know, there was the story leading up to that about how when he was at Houston, he went to, Del Frisco's with Bob Stoops, and he had to order a hamburger because he wasn't rich enough to buy the steak and all that crap. You don't remember that?
Yeah, a little bit. I just remember the when he was talking about, we can't come in here and sprinkle fairy dust.
Yeah, he made
Sark
that.
Sark kind of said the same thing.
Yeah.
What is with fairy dust down there?
No comment. We better go before we get fired.
Imported from California?
Better go before we get fired.
It's a fagoozy. It's a fairy dust.
All in all, though, it was a pretty boring Big 12 media day.
Yeah, I didn't see a lot. I mean,
Nobody
the big name players didn't even show up.
No, nobody really talked any trash. There wasn't.
Nah.
It was a little bit boring, which is no fun. Tonight, game 6 of the NBA Finals. Milwaukee Bucks with the chance to close out the Phoenix Suns 4-2 on their home floor. Milwaukee lost the first two games, has roared back with three straight wins, including a road win on Saturday night in Phoenix to take their first lead of the series at 3-2. And so I already had this on the list to talk about. And then this morning I saw the referee assignment for Game 6. And I saw a name and I thought to myself, wait a minute. There's some history here between Scott Foster and Chris Paul. And it took a very easy little Google search to pull up that Chris Paul teams in his career in the playoffs are 1-12. And the interesting thing about the one win, it was game two of the Western Conference Finals this year against the Clippers. You know what was interesting about that?
What's that?
Chris Paul didn't play.
Oh, my.
So a Chris Paul team has never won a game in the playoffs in which he played in the game when Scott Foster has been the ref.
Oh, my.
It's pretty interesting, isn't it?
You think that's just an anomaly or just the way the game's being called by him?
God, you,
it just doesn't match up with how Chris Paul plays.
There are some of these different, throughout the history, there have been kind of these weird little deals with one player and one ref. But I don't know if any of them have been quite this egregious, where in 12 tries, when Chris Paul has played in the game, they literally, his team has never won. Now, I don't think it's some kind of Tim Donaghy thing where Scott Foster just has it out for Chris Paul. But I think what you're saying probably lends a little credence. There's something about the way that he calls the game that goes counteracting the way Chris Paul plays the game. And it could be that the game gets rougher, you know?
Yeah.
And that bothers Chris Paul because he's a little bit slighter of stature, you know, and he's able to kind of get roughed up by the guy guarding him, which is almost always a bigger guy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And doesn't get the benefit of the whistle. It could be that it's called tighter and Chris Paul gets into foul trouble. I don't think it's that second one, though. Otherwise, then that another stat would come along with the record of, and oh, by the way, he's fouled out 7 times or what have you. So I think it's probably a little bit of the first thing where, and it may not be just it's more physical, but there's something is allowed by a Scott Foster crew that counteracts what Chris Paul does.
That's all I'm going to be looking for tonight, watching tonight's game, is what is different here? What, you know? Now, listen, I couldn't tell you which one Scott Foster is.
You know him.
Pretty recognizable.
Yeah, he's just the guy that he's kind of got salt and pepper hair. Okay. A white guy, pretty fit. Tony Brothers is one of the other referees, which he's recognizable as about any of them anymore, with the mustache. He's called tons of these games. He's you'll recognize him. I can't remember the third member. But, yeah, what a seemingly tough break for the Phoenix Suns. Down 3-2, must win to force a Game 7 back on your home floor. And you look up the morning of the game and see Scott Foster as the crew chief in Game 6. And, of course, now you got to – is
now it's already in his head.
So what about this? I mean, let's go conspiracy theory for just a second. Is there something about the way that Chris Paul has handled being the head of the Players Association that the league hasn't liked? Is this a way to get back at Chris Paul for negotiation tactics in the CBA stuff that happened during COVID?
That's a pretty deep rabbit hole right there.
It is. It is. It's probably not. But that's what opens yourself. When you assign that guy to this game, that's what it opens those floodgates of thought.
Makes you wonder.
Yeah, it does.
It makes you wonder.
And I think everybody somewhat kind of believes that the NBA would love a Game 7, obviously, for recovering ratings and that kind of thing.
Right.
So maybe this will be the one, the breaker of the streak. Here's another dubious stat if you're Chris Paul and in Phoenix Suns. How many players in NBA history do you think have been a part of blowing 2-0 leads in 7-game series 3 different times?
How many players? Is it just one?
It's two.
Two of them?
It's two.
Who is it?
I'm guessing you can guess the first one.
Russell Westbrook?
No.
Kevin Durant?
Chris Paul.
Chris
Paul could become the first player to lose 4 best-of-7 series in which his team led 2-0. Can he, if you think about it, with who the first one is, you can probably get the second one.
I don't know.
Who was his longest teammate?
Chris Paul's?
Mm-hmm.
Blake Griffin?
Correct. Those are the only two guys.
Golly.
That have lost 3 series up 2-0 in NBA history. And Chris Paul can take that distinction all alone as the only guy with 4 such circumstances.
You don't want to use that to label him a loser.
No.
You got to win a lot of games to get in that position and put yourself in that position, especially going up 2-0. But what is it about Chris Paul not able to close out series? Is it age at this point? Has there been some question about his health?
Or yeah, there's the you know, people are trying to give him the left wrist excuse already, his hand.
Right.
He didn't take it. I heard some comments yesterday where a guy was trying to give him the out, and he was like, no, I'm fine. Which you got to respect. And maybe some of that, you know, I can't think back to how many times or what, you know, what exactly were the series when that happened.
Yeah.
You know, and how many of those did he get to finish? You know, was the reason they lost the 2-0 lead
because
he got hurt?
Right, right.
I didn't look long enough. I just saw this pop up, and I didn't look for what those series were. But I think his stature is part of it, where guys can wear him down. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind anyway when you ask what changed yesterday. Putting Drew Holiday on him 94 feet and making him work to get the ball across into the front court, I think that's taken its toll on him.
Right.
I also think you're able to make him work on defense, beat him up a little bit, running through screens and that kind of thing. I think that just takes a toll on the body. And the older you get, the more, you know, it matters. And it was a good break for him early in the playoffs, I think, to be able to miss some games, even though his team won, to try to stay fresh. But I think you're seeing why. Because now he's played, 14 or 15 in a row in the last 2.5 series. And I think you're finally starting to see it kind of wear down on him a little bit. And, you know, they're going to have Chris Paul be fantastic. I mean, Booker's been great. He's had 40 the last and shot. But, you know, if you're Phoenix, it's a really interesting thing because in game 4, they held Milwaukee to 40% shooting, but they lost. Then in game 5, they shot 55%, but Milwaukee shot 53%, and they lost. So is it one of those cases if you're one of the guys on Phoenix going, well, man, we should have won both of those games. They lucked out. Or, my gosh, what do we have to do to beat these guys? It feels to me like if it comes down to the end and it's a close game with 2 minutes to go, Milwaukee has the gigantic edge for some reason in late-game execution. Part of it is, you know how many times Devin Booker has earned an assist in the fourth quarter of this series? None. Zero. He's taken 24 shots and has 0 assists.
Yeah.
And I get it. He's been flaming hot a couple of these going into the fourth quarters of a couple of these games. But, you know, how much does that kind of stagnate the offense? The one time he did look like he was going to get an assist in the fourth quarter is that incredible block that Giannis made on the alley-oop. There's a lot of interesting things going on in this game tonight. Can Middleton and can Drew Holiday, if they have another shooting game like they had in game 5, Milwaukee wins.
Yeah.
because you're going to get whatever Giannis does. I mean, it's like a bad night for Giannis is 12 of 19. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so what do you think? You think Phoenix is going to be able to get it done? Or do you think that this is going to be the end?
I think this is it. I think Milwaukee takes care of it. They're a favorite by, I'm going to guess, 6 or 7. But I think Milwaukee takes care of home. They are rolling with the momentum. And I don't care what ref's on the court right now, but I think the age thing for Chris Paul is a thing. I think that he just won't be able to keep up. Sad to say, but I think the adjustment that they made with Holiday on him, just constantly wearing him out, is a thing too. So I think it's close, but I think Milwaukee takes care of it. They win, and the deer camp, whatever it's called, goes crazy. And listen, part of me is rooting for the small market aspect of it.
Yeah.
Because I want to see that it can be done.
With one guy and some, yeah. And not have, I mean, Middleton and Holiday are good players. They're not superstars.
No.
I don't even know if you'd call them a star.
Right.
Maybe an all-star, maybe a fringe all-star.
If you've watched basketball, you know them.
Yeah.
But they're not, you're not seeing their jerseys on every kid in the mall. No, but you see Giannis, and I couldn't tell you in the Denver airport how many Giannis jerseys I saw. I know it's an airport, a lot of transfers and all that stuff. I saw more Milwaukee jerseys and shirts than Phoenix stuff. Right there in the hub of the mountains. But that's, I guess, is why I'm leaning that way, because I want to see this. I want to see Milwaukee tell the nation, the world, the league that small markets are still relevant. You can still win. Mm-hmm. You can win a championship in small markets. And that should give Oklahoma City fans hope.
Bucks 5-point favorite.
5-point. Okay, that was close. Yeah, what do you got?
Obviously, I'm going to say the Bucks are going to win because I had Bucks in 6. I'll tell you this, though. Phoenix doesn't seem like a team that'll fold.
No, I don't. That's what I said. I think it'll be close.
I think it'll be a good game.
Yeah.
We'll be back to talk about it tomorrow. Everybody have a great Tuesday.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way!